I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, October 14th. If you know one thing about Amy Coney Barrett by now, it's probably that she has seven children and would be the first woman justice ever on the Supreme Court with school-age children at home. Now, you probably never heard that her role model, the late Justice Antonin Scalia, had nine children while he was on the bench. Why are her children a selling point when his were not discussed? Today is the second and final day of Amy Coney Barrett's testimony at her Supreme Court confirmation hearings. Here's a clip from yesterday in which the idea of sort of liberal versus conservative womanhood came up around Barrett's gender and parental status. It's from Republican Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa, who accused Democrats of saying Barrett would not be good for women without those Democrats trying to understand what kind of woman Amy Coney Barrett is.
I'm struck by the irony of how demeaning to women their accusations really are, that you, a working mother of seven, with a strong record of professional and academic accomplishment, couldn't possibly respect the goals and desires of today's women.
So we will start there this morning. We welcome Amanda Becker, Washington correspondent for The 19th, a nonprofit news organization reporting on gender, politics, and policy. The 19th, for those of you who don't know it yet, is a new news organization just launched this summer around the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which gave women, mostly white women in practice, the right to vote in 1920. Amanda's latest article is called "Has Susan Collins Changed or Have the Rest of Us?" Hi, Amanda. Thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
So I don't know if you heard the clip of Joni Ernst that we played as we were getting your line hooked up, or if you heard her yesterday, but I'm curious if you see liberal and conservative ideas of modern womanhood or of gender equity under the law clashing here.
They are, to a certain extent. I mean, first of all, you heard members just talking about gender more broadly before the kind of ideological split. You heard senators from both parties asking her a lot about her children and her family. And while you typically get into people's families a little bit in these confirmation hearings, I would have to go back and look at all the transcripts, but I would doubt that Justice Scalia, for example, fielded as many questions about his family during his own confirmation process. And that's, of course, Amy Coney Barrett's mentor on the Supreme Court. And then you did and see people like Senator Lindsey Graham saying you would not only be shattering a glass ceiling for conservative women, you would be shattering a concrete barrier. So there is this kind of split among women and barriers. And, you know, a lot of conservative women don't really feel welcome by the feminist movement, by the women's movement more broadly. So you did kind of see that play out to a certain extent the first 2 days of this hearing.
And, you know, the Democrats have carefully stayed away, it seems to me, from the religious sect that Coney Barrett belongs to, called People of Praise, which has gotten described as being very retro-conservative in gender terms, seeing men as head of household, things like that. I read that Barrett herself used to be what the group used to call a handmaid, actually had that title, and people can have had it in that sect. I guess they've moved away from that now. But have you looked into that?
You know, I read more about People of Praise actually when she was going through her appeals court confirmation process, when it was more of an issue. And I think the reason that Democrats aren't asking her a lot about it right now is because they kind of stepped in it during that appeals court confirmation process when they did ask her a lot of questions about that. And it was really painted by Republicans as an attack on her Catholic faith. And so I think they knew going into this, the Democratic senators, that that was not a good area of focus for them, that to maybe leave the personal and the personal and merely stick to how she might apply the personal, if at all, to the court and her decisions. Because you're right, we have not heard them ask many questions about that yet. week.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? Exactly what you said. People can have whatever gender or family relations or religious beliefs they want, and it should not come into play in judging somebody for office or a seat on the Supreme Court. But the issue would be if she is there in part to establish her private religious beliefs. That's why they call it the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment, right? Partly so that individuals who are in power don't establish their religion as part of public law. Do you think the Democrats have asked that enough?
They have certainly asked it a lot in many different ways as it applies to several different policy areas, and I think that they will continue to ask her about that today and until this process ends. At one point yesterday, a quote that I had written down, Amy Coney Barrett said, quote, "Judges can't just wake up one day and say, I have an agenda. I like guns. I hate guns. I like abortion. I hate abortion. And walk in like a royal queen and impose their will on the world." So anytime a Democrat was questioning her yesterday, she really tried to make clear that she was going to separate her personal views from how she ruled on cases, and that she had, quote, made no commitments to the White House on any of these main issues that are kind of up in these questions that we're hearing from the Democrats. So there's really been a strong, strong focus on not just Roe v. Wade, which was expected, the 1973 law that legalized abortion nationally, but the Affordable Care Act and healthcare more broadly. We heard her say she is, quote, not on a mission to destroy the ACA, when she was asked by the Democratic senators in a variety of ways about how she would rule on that issue. Because that the reality is the court has a case shortly after the election, about 1 week after the election, where they could gut the ACA. So, you know, this isn't a theoretical. This is a case the court will be hearing shortly after she joins it, if she is confirmed. So she talked about, you know, keeping her personal views out of that. She talked about keeping her personal views out of abortion. She has been very clear in her writings in the past that on a personal level and on a religious level, she does not believe abortion should happen, you know, from conception to birth, that is just not something that comports with her faith. But she said over and over again yesterday, you know, that is her personal view. And anything she said on that in the past is her personal view. But then she did also say she did not view Roe v. Wade as being a super precedent, which, you know, would be something like Brown versus Board of Education is the example mm-hmm. that a lot of people are using that ended segregation in schools. So she said it's not that kind of case. It's just so decided that it could never be questioned, and it isn't questioned right now. But she went on to say, but that doesn't necessarily mean it should be overruled. So, you know, you saw her trying to walk a fine line on a lot of this by trying to separate how she would act as a jurist from her personal beliefs in her own life.
Let's take a phone call. Kimberly in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks. Long time listener. Well, I'm a Republican. Well, I was a Republican from 18 until 2 years ago when I got so disgusted that I switched to being an independent. So I do have some things in common with Amy Coney Barrett, including her Christian faith. But I don't think that she's being unfairly scrutinized for being a mother of a large brood of children, because she's the one who brought it up first. It was, you know, practically the first thing out of her mouth when she, you know, was introduced in the Rose Garden, and she's brought it up several times since. She has most of them sitting behind her, and I don't really remember any of the male justices during their confirmations doing that. So, I mean, you know, I don't think that she can really have it both ways, and she also doesn't seem bothered by people, you know, bringing up her position as a mother as well as a judge and a lawyer and other things. So, you know, if she's going to introduce it into play, then, you know, it's fair for people to comment on it.
Can I ask, since you brought it up, what made you move from Republican to independent in 2018 You said you used to be a Republican, but then you shifted to independent in 2018 because you were so disgusted. What were you disgusted
with?
Yes.
Well, I was not only a Republican, I was a Black Republican growing up in New York City. So, yeah, the trauma with that is big. Try explaining that to most people in New York that you're Black and Republican. Well, when Trump got elected in 2016, my intention was to hang in there, because what a lot of people in this country forget, but I as a native New Yorker know, is that Trump was not a Republican, so-called, for most of his life. He was a Democrat. So my feeling was, you know, this guy is not going to run me out of my party that I've been in, you know, 10 times longer than he even has. But it got to the point, not just with him, but with all the Republicans falling behind him and, you know, turning into invertebrate creatures without any spines whatsoever, that I couldn't do it anymore. And I don't remember now what the precipitating event was, but I just got to a point where it clicked in my head, and I said, I can't do this any longer. I've got to leave.
Kimberly, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. Crystal in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Crystal. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having me on. I am just incensed watching these hearings, because it's just such, in the Black community, we have a saying, all skin folk is not kin folk. And that is directly to Amy Coney Barrett as a woman. Just because she happens to be a woman doesn't mean that she speaks for women or represents women's interests or anything to do with their best health or ideas in mind. And the fact that the Republicans are holding her up as this pinnacle of motherhood and trying to use her motherhood as a guise to slide her in is ridiculous. And she sits there acting like everything is okay. And she is this woman who's has this career and she's wrangling these seven children. And it's also this dangerous precedent of, we are not doing it all. We are not okay. It is COVID. Mothers are doing the most all the time. And to have Coney Barrett sit there and say all is okay and not even answer proper questions, and for them to use her motherhood as a sounding board for her to be okay, is disgusting to me.
Crystal, thank you very much for your call. And here's a clip that I think kind of goes to the feeling that Crystal has and to the issues that Crystal was raising. It's Senator Kamala Harris, who attended virtually yesterday, asking a question of Amy Coney Barrett that brought in the Affordable Care Act, the number one issue raised by Democrats, but also race.
A pandemic that, when age is taken into account, has been three times as deadly for Black, Latino, Pacific Islander, and Native Americans. A pandemic that has killed approximately 1 in 1,000 Black Americans, 1 in 1,200 Native Americans, and 1 in 1,500 Latino Americans. Judge Barrett, would you consider the 135 million people who gained protections under the Affordable Care Act when deciding a case that challenges that law?
Senator Harris, if I were to be confirmed and conclude that I was not, that I was able to sit on the case pursuant to the recusal statute, and then if I heard the case and decided the case, I would consider all the protections that Congress put in place. And as I said earlier, during this hearing, the question would be figuring out whether Congress, assuming that the mandate is unconstitutional now, whether that consistent with your intent, you know, this is Congress's law, would permit this act to stand, or whether the flawed portion of it could just be excised out. And that is a question not of what judges want. It's not a question of the Supreme Court. It's a question of what Congress wanted in the statute.
So, Amanda Becker from the 19th, to me, in a certain respect, that clip was the entire, 11 hours of hearings in a nutshell.
Long.
Democrats were raising various versions of, Judge, people are suffering here, real people with real lives. women, people of color, others, would you take their humanity into account or only the text on the page? And then Judge Barrett, who on the one hand is being sold as obviously having empathy because she's raising seven kids, would give these very dispassionate, legalistic answers. And sort of that was the whole 11 hours in a certain respect. I'm curious how you heard that exchange with Kamala Harris.
I mean, we heard, you're right, we heard some variation of this exchange over and over and over again yesterday. I also remember Senator Leahy going through the millions of people who were protected by various components of the Affordable Care Act, including young adults under the age of 26 and how many of them could lose their insurance if the Affordable Care Act is overturned by the court. She, you know, Amy Coney Barrett was giving the answers that, frankly, a Supreme Court nominee should. If you go back and you look through all the confirmation hearings in modern times and watch sections of them on key issues, a nominee is going to avoid, to the extent that they can, hopefully in their mind completely, answering any question about how they would rule on X, Y, or Z. They're going to just say, you know, I'll look at the statute as it's written, and or, you know, I'll look at how that comports with the Constitution. I have never seen a Supreme Court justice start to wade into how they would actually rule on something. So it's completely normal in that sense that she wouldn't answer those questions. It was the same for Brett Kavanaugh. It was the same for Neil Gorsuch several years ago. That is a very kind of tried and true way to approach these questions if you're the one sitting in that seat, because the minute you answer how you would rule on something, then it opens you up to a lot of litmus test type things. And there's really just no upside for a Supreme Court justice to say, a potential justice to say how they would rule on something in advance.
I want to play one more clip before you go, and that is specifically about recusal on what might be the most hot button issue that she might have to get to rule on. She might have to rule on or get to rule on if she doesn't recuse herself very quickly after the election, and that is things having to do with the election itself after President Trump said he was nominating her because he needed a ninth, or nominating anyone at this time because he needs a ninth justice on the Supreme Court for election disputes. The question here comes from Democratic Senator Coons from Delaware.
Given the rushed context of this confirmation, will you commit to recusing yourself from any case arising from a dispute in the presidential election results 3 weeks from now?
Senator Coons, thank you for giving me the opportunity to clarify this, because I want to be very clear for the record and to all members of this committee that no matter what anyone else may think or expect, I have not committed to anyone or so much as signaled. I've never even written. I've been in a couple of opinions in the Seventh Circuit that have been around the edges of election law. But I haven't even written anything that I would think anybody could reasonably say, oh, this is how she might resolve an election dispute. And I would consider it, let's see, I certainly hope that all members of the committee have more confidence in my integrity than to think that I would allow myself to be used as a pawn to decide this election for the American people. So that would be on the question of actual bias. And you asked about the appearance of bias.
Correct.
And you're right that the statute does require a justice or judge to recuse when there's an appearance of bias. And what I will commit to every member of this committee, to the rest of the Senate, and to the American people, is that I will consider all factors that are relevant to that question, relevant to that question that requires recusal when there's an appearance of bias. And there is case law under the statute. And as I referenced earlier, in describing the recusal process at the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg said that it is always done with consultation of the other justices. And so I promise you that if I were confirmed, and if an election dispute arises, you know, both of which are ifs, that I would very seriously undertake that process, and I would consider every relevant factor. I can't commit to you right now for the reasons that we've talked about before, but I do assure you of my integrity, and I do assure you that I would take that question very seriously.
And in a way, just like the Kamala Harris clip that we played earlier with Amy Coney Barrett, that was the 11 hours in a nutshell, Amanda. Judge Barrett not promising any particular action, but promising she would take everybody's position and all the circumstances into account with integrity and an open mind.
Yes, and earlier in the day, and at this point, I forget which senator prompted this or elicited this response, but it was about deciding the election, and it was about how President Trump has openly said we need to get a ninth justice on there in case we need to decide the election, and she would be that ninth justice. She said she used the word pawn. She said she would not be used as a pawn to decide this election, and that she had not communicated with the White House about that. And that was the one time I heard her during the day kind of bristle to my ears when she was responding that, you know, she wasn't just some pawn that the White House was going to put in there to swing the election for President Trump. So that is kind of one thing where I think that she, her smooth was ruffled a little bit, because she was a very prepared, she was very prepared. When I compare it to even just Brett Kavanaugh's hearings, which of course took on a completely different tone once sexual assault allegations came to light. She sat there with an empty notepad. She wasn't shuffling papers in front of her. She had very clear answers. She was very well prepared. So that is like the one time to me yesterday that stood out when she said she wasn't a pawn, that she seemed a little bit put off by the question she was getting.
I know you got to go. Can you give me like 15 seconds on why Democrats held this like a normal confirmation at all? Half the callers on our board want to ask, why aren't they just boycotting? Because there shouldn't be a nominee right now.
You know, I think that this justice is probably going to get confirmed no matter what, and they could sit the process out, but that also seeds kind of driving the conversation around the justice to a certain extent to Republicans. You know, Democrats could have gone several different ways with this hearing. They could have focused it mostly on abortion. They could have focused it mainly on her religion. They chose to focus it on health care. And that is not accidental. Democrats won in 2018 on health care, and they took back the House. In a lot of these competitive Senate races, they're hoping that health care is going to allow them to take back the Senate. It's an issue in the presidential race. So by showing up for the hearing, albeit virtually, the Democrats are able to repeatedly, for 11 to 12 hours a day, get her to talk about the Affordable Care Act, which is a topic that they think they have the higher ground on with voters. And it keeps that in the conversation in the final weeks before the election.
Amanda Becker, Washington correspondent for the 19th. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.